welcome back to Surgery 101, the series of surgery podcasts produced for medical students with the assistance of the University of Alberta. In this episode, we welcome Dr. Jarrett Olson from our division of plastic surgery, and he'll be giving a brief overview of a topic that I know I've found confusing in the past, that of cleft lip and cleft palate. He'll be talking about inheritance patterns of the condition, reviewing some of the problems that children with cleft lip and palate can have, and talking briefly about the timing and the types of correctional surgery. So, let's learn a little more about deformities of the lip and palate here on Surgery 101.
The three take-home messages for cleft lip and palate in our discussion today are going to be 1. Inheritance patterns, 2. The help that's available to the referring physicians, and 3. The clinical problems that are associated with the cleft lip and palate. First, let's talk about the inheritance patterns. Cleft lip and palate in the general population is approximately 1 in 750. It is slightly lower in the African population, ranging in the 1 in 1,000 range, and slightly higher in the Asian population at approximately 1 in 500. The incidence of cleft palate is approximately 1 in 2,000. The overall inheritance pattern of a cleft lip and palate, of course, is said to be multifactorial. Approximately 75% of all new patients with cleft lip and palate have no familial history directly related to the cleft lip and palate. Once we have a relative with a cleft lip or palate, however, the incidence does rise slightly. If a family were to have one child with a cleft lip, the chance of a subsequent child with a cleft lip rises slightly to 4%. This means that there's still a 96% chance that they will not have another child with a cleft lip. For a family that has a child with a cleft palate, the chance of having a subsequent child with a cleft palate goes up to 2%. Similarly, if one parent has a cleft lip or a cleft palate, the chances go up to 4% and 2% respectively. The incidence increases even more if there is a parent and a single sibling that have a cleft lip or a cleft palate, and in this instance it rises to approximately 15%. The other thing to note is the difference between the occurrence of these problems in women versus men. Women tend to have a 2-to-1 increased rate of cleft palate compared to men, whereas men have a 2-to-1 increased rate of cleft lip. As a physician, we need to look for any other anomalies that might exist. One should always be very alert and looking for something, particularly if there is an isolated cleft palate. In the patient that has an isolated cleft palate, there is approximately a 40% chance of having another anomaly or having a syndrome associated. Whereas with an isolated cleft lip, it's only 15%. So the isolated cleft palate has a much higher rate. Let's now talk about some of the clinical issues that face these children. When talking about the cleft lip, the major issue that's associated with it is one of aesthetics. It does not tend to affect speech, nor does it tend to affect feeding. When we talk about cleft palate, there are 4 major problems that are associated with a cleft palate. The first that the physician will come across is the problem of feeding. Because the children with cleft palate cannot form a suction, meaning that the air will escape through their nose, they cannot breastfeed nor bottle feed normally. This can become quite a source of angst for the parent if they're told that they can breastfeed and they are unable to do so. Also, it can be quite dangerous for the child as they will be a failure to thrive. There's always resources at the cleft lip and palate team to help you with the feeding. However, what we do in general is use specialized feeding bottles. The 2 types of bottles most commonly used are a Mead-Johnson bottle or a Haberman bottle, whereby you can actually pump milk into the child and they can get the nourishment needed. The second clinical problem that we come across is that of middle ear infections. Now, of course, all small children have a chance of having ear infections. However, the children with cleft palate, their rate is significantly higher. The reason for this is that the muscles that open the eustachian tube to drain the middle ear originate in the palate. With a clefted palate, these muscles do not function normally. You have a buildup of fluid in the middle ear and subsequent increased risk of infection. Because of this, most children will end up getting meningitis tubes at the time of cleft palate repair. Interestingly, once the repair is performed and the muscles are put back into their anatomic position, children still have problems with their middle ears and usually a lifelong problem. The third and perhaps the most important clinical problem from our standpoint is one of speech. Children with a cleft palate tend to have hypernasal speech because they cannot close the nose from the mouth. In the English language, there are only three sounds we really want to have come through the nose. Those are M, N, and ing. If you can't close the mouth from the nose, you get hypernasal speech like the following. The speech sounds hypernasal. And the children are very hard to understand. This is the biggest reason to actually perform a repair of the cleft palate. If you go to third world countries, there are many people walking around with cleft palates. They've grown, they have healthy lives. It's their speech that is the problem. We find that the timing of the repair of this affects the speech, and we will discuss this in a little while. The fourth clinical problem associated with cleft palate happens much later in life, and that is one of mid-face hypoplasia. The growth centers in the upper jaw are slightly stunted, and many of these children will have hypoplasia of the upper jaw. This reflects itself in a class 3 occlusion, or an underbite. Let's talk about the cleft lip repair. We will typically perform a cleft lip repair at approximately 3 to 4 months age. We wait until this age as the children are now old enough to tolerate an anesthetic. There is no advantage to doing the repair any later as the children are large enough at this age to do it and get a good repair. Occasionally, we will wait slightly longer if we've decided to do some pre-surgical orthopedics. What does this mean? Some of the children have a complete cleft of the lip and palate, and when you look in, you'll see that the alveolus, or gums, are very widely displaced. This makes repair of the cleft lip very difficult. We now have new techniques with our orthodontists where they can make a plate for the children. This plate is adjusted once a week, and it helps bring these alveolar segments into better alignment, allowing us to get a better repair. The issue with this, of course, is that for children that live very far away from the center, it can be quite time-consuming and quite difficult to do. The cleft palate is repaired at 9 to 12 months of age. A balance has been struck in the cleft palate. We know that the earlier we repair the cleft palate, the better the speech. However, if we repair the cleft palate earlier, it also tends to affect the facial growth. We know that if we repair it before age 1, the speech is still quite good, and if we wait, let the face grow up till age 1, the growth tends to be better. So this is why the balance of 9 to 12 months. Let's talk about some of the secondary surgeries that the children may need. Occasionally, they will need a lip revision. They will often need speech therapy. And occasionally, a second surgery for the speech. Repairing the cleft is approximately 90% successful for speech. That means 10% of children will not have normal speech afterwards and may need what we call a pharyngeal flap. There's also significant concerns with some of the children that have cleft lip. They have significant nasal deformity and may need a rhinoplasty later. As well, orthognathic surgery may be indicated also as they get into their teenage years to help correct the significant underbite. A child with a complete cleft of the lip and palate will of course have a cleft that goes through the alveolus. Most experts agree that the alveolus does not need to be repaired immediately, and so when the child comes back from their cleft palate repair, you will notice that there is still a hole in the gums. This is repaired at approximately age 6 or 7 years, as we want to wait for the adult teeth to come in because the teeth support the jaw, just as the jaw supports the teeth. I'd like to talk about one last clinical scenario that is of significant concern, and that is the child that is born with an isolated cleft palate and has trouble breathing at birth. There is a sequence or syndrome called Pierre-Robin sequence. This is made up of three things. It's made up of glossoptosis, or big tongue, retronathic mandible, or mandible that's retruded, and airway obstruction. These children have a great degree of difficulty breathing as their tongue tends to fall back in their throat. If a child is born with an isolated cleft palate and you notice that they have significant troubles breathing, they should be referred to a tertiary center immediately as they will need immediate attention for their airway. So let's review. What are the top three important things to remember about a cleft lip and palate? We should remember the inheritance patterns so we can discuss this intelligently with the family. And we must remember the important clinical issues associated with each. For the cleft lip, it is mainly aesthetic. For the cleft palate, it is feeding, it is middle ear infections, it is speech, and it is facial growth.
So there we have it, a medical student's basic guide to surgery of cleft lip and palate. As we always do say on Surgery 101, we're only covering the very basics here. If you'd like to get more information on the condition or discover more about the types of surgery we've mentioned here, please check with your local surgeon, look it up in your textbook, or look for some operative video online. As always, we look forward to your comments at surgery101.org, and we're always happy to receive email at surgerypodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening to our podcast, and we look forward to seeing you again on the next episode of Surgery 101.